This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 6th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 390. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, Canada has fallen on a world anti-corruption ranking, and Canada is behind China and Russia in real estate secrecy and anti-money laundering practices. This week's guest on the podcast says voters deserve better from whoever forms government after the April 28th election. The Executive Director of Transparency International Canada, Trevor Loke, is my guest right after this. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. My guest this week on the Breaker.News podcast is Trevor Loke, the Executive Director of Transparency International Canada. It's part of a worldwide anti-corruption organization, non-governmental organization. You might recognize Trevor. He's a former Park Board Commissioner here in Vancouver, was in office from 2011 to 2014 with the Vision Vancouver Party, the youngest elected official in Vancouver history at the time, age 22. Now, Trevor, first of all, before we get into the important stuff, did you miss politics? Do you miss the Park Board?
You know, with the way that tribalism is today, I mean, it was funny, you know, back in the day on the Park Board, the party politics then was pretty tribal, and I think it's gotten a lot worse in the 11 years, you know, since I've been involved in elected politics. So no, I don't miss it, and I actually think that politicians, those willing to put their name forward today, are actually very brave for doing so, given the environment that we're in.
It's one of the local issues here is that Vancouver has an elected park board, mm-hmm. and the mayor of Vancouver, Ken Sim, wants to abolish it. He ran on a platform to actually improve the park board after saying he wanted to get rid of it. But then a year later, he announced that he wants to abolish the elected park board. So take away the citizens' right to vote on who represents them. What are your thoughts on this, putting your Transparency International hat on?
Well, it's a very interesting question. I mean, ultimately, as you know, cities are the creatures of the province, and so they are bound by legislation like the charter in Vancouver is very unique. And since, and so it's really up to the province, actually, in terms of how the governance ultimately is decided. And so Ken Sim did not put in his platform that he was going to abolish the park board. This is something he came up with afterwards. So I think there's a question of legitimacy around how anyone could move this forward when there's not been a vote, there's been no real decision, there's no transition plan in terms of what would happen here. So kind of making it up as you go along is not a good political path forward, if I'm giving political advice today. So I would, you know, if I were the province, I would be asking what legitimacy there was to be able to make a decision that big in the governance of the largest city in the province.
Before people hear this podcast, there was a by-election in Vancouver for two city council seats, and it could have been an opportunity to put this question to the people, because it's the people that ultimately own the park board and pay for the park board. Now, speaking of elections, we're in the middle of a federal election. This one was called snap election, called less than 2 months after the final report of the Hogue Commission on Foreign Interference. And that report contained recommendations to combat foreign interference in Canada's politics and governance, you know, by China, Russia, India, Iran, and others. Yet we saw during the end of the first week of this campaign that this issue came back with a vengeance. Paul Chang, Liberal candidate in one of the Toronto area ridings, there was a recording of him in a meeting in January in which he suggested that a conservative opponent, Joe Tay, be turned into the Chinese consulate in Toronto for a bounty.
He is wanted by the Chinese government, and there's a $1 million reward on his head. So they want, if you guys want to pick him up and take him to the Chinese consulate, you make $1 million. I'm just joking. But there is an arrest warrant out for him from the government of China, and there is a reward for him. But apart from that, I can't say more than that. Right?
Joe Tay has been outspoken as a Hong Kong Canadian in favor of the Hong Kong democracy movement. Do you think that this election should have waited until October under the fixed election date law so that foreign interference could have been tackled by the new Prime Minister, Mark Carney.
Let's go back to 1997 when Hong Kong was transferred back to China, and there was an agreement explicitly in place for the conditions of that transfer that the British abided by and that China also needs to abide by under international law. It has violated that agreement by persecuting the people of Hong Kong and putting in place a puppet regime that is now coming into the sovereign territory of Canada to intimidate people running for election in our country. Let's think about the seriousness of this. Paul Cheng was standing behind an emblem of the Parliament of Canada while he was suggesting that there was an active bounty by a hostile foreign regime on his political opponent. This is a nonpartisan issue. You know, Bob, that politically I come from the left of the spectrum. I have never been accused publicly of being a conservative. And so my speaking out on this and others speaking out on this, Hong Kong Watch and other brave civil society organizations, there should have been action immediately. And I thought it was deeply troubling that it took as long as it did for the right thing to be done.
Do you think that Mark Carney failed the test, that he should have made the decision instead of waiting for Paul Cheng to basically make a decision and make an announcement just a few minutes before the clock struck 12 and it became April Fool's Day?
Look, ultimately, we're in the middle of an election, and I'm not going to comment on anything further other than to say that when there was an instance of foreign interference that was this black and white, I thought it was deeply troubling for this election campaign for it to be hanging in limbo for as long as it was, and for people that I have deep respect for to be completely silent on an issue of national security that was this significant was troubling.
Now, some of the important work that Transparency International has done globally as well as here in Canada, I want you to talk about that. The recent Corruption Perception Index, the annual barometer of public sector corruption in the world, it saw Canada slide to 15th place, the worst showing ever. 15th place isn't bad if you're looking at 180 countries, but some of those 180 countries are just awful, and Canada always wants to do better. Canada was tied with Germany, but behind Uruguay. I think Canada would love to be behind Uruguay in soccer worldwide, but Uruguay is not exactly a shining example of governance itself. It's had problems over the years. Even Germany being tied with Canada 15th isn't good for Germany, especially if you look further up the list and you see Australia and New Zealand doing a better job. This also happens while the United States under Donald Trump is backtracking on so many anti-corruption measures.
In terms of the results this year, yes, you're right. This is Canada's worst showing on record. The index has been coming out for almost 30 years now. When we first started the index, Canada was in sixth place. It's now dropped to 15th over a period of time. But really, since 2012, we've been measuring the trend going down. And so what we've seen is some forward progress, and I do want to give credit to the Liberal government in terms of their support for beneficial ownership transparency. One of the greatest steps forward we could have made as a country was bringing forward beneficial ownership transparency so that we know who's behind the ownership of numbered companies ultimately in this country and who's benefiting from the assets that are being collected through these companies. Now, of course, there's a glaring loophole in the fact that most of the registrations are through the provinces, and so we are encouraging others to do, as BC, to its credit, has done, bringing forward these registries at the provincial level. Quebec has one in place. We've seen some progress from the government of Ontario in terms of announcing that they want to bring this forward. So we'll see what the province does there. But certainly we want all of the provinces to have beneficial ownership transparency so that we don't have, outliers where, corrupt actors can park their assets in numbered companies and we have no idea who actually owns them or who benefits from them. So let's say that there is some good things happening. I think the foreign agent registry is timely in terms of coming forward. Now, of course, it's not fully online. We need to be able to see what's happening and whether the law can actually be applied. Perhaps this case, these cases of foreign interference that we're talking about could be instances by which we can see whether this law has the teeth that we hope that it does, ultimately to be able to get criminal convictions for people who are interfering in democratic Canadian elections. So some positive steps. Now, ultimately, what we're seeing, though, is a huge increase in the dirty money that's flowing through this country, estimates of up to $113 billion funds this year. This represents approximately 5% of our total GDP. This is a highly problematic problem, and the concentration of which in two of our largest cities, Vancouver and Toronto especially, that are bearing the brunt of where these financial transactions are taking place. So we need to see more action. One of the things that we are calling for is stronger legislation in terms of actually establishing a Canadian financial crimes agency with investigative and prosecutorial powers separate from the RCMP so that it can actually launch its own investigations and see them through a court process without needing to hand off to another agency. I think that's extremely important. It also needs to be well-resourced so that it has the capacity to do what the RCMP cannot do today or what CSIS cannot do today simply because they don't have the resources and we don't have the agents and experts that are trained to be able to do this. And so we need an agency that is specialized in this area to be able to come in to monitor, investigate, and prosecute. That is one of the most important things we can do in terms of a dirty money perspective. There's a lot there that I can get into in terms of what are the other priorities, but ultimately what we try to focus on in terms of our strategy 2030 that we've laid out is, number one, let's stop the flow of dirty money. I've talked about some ways we can do that. Whistleblower legislation would also be a huge step forward in being able to unlock any of these strategic pillars. The second is driving integrity in the business sector. We've seen ultimately a number of Canadian companies being called out, most recently TD Bank by the United States government in terms of its money laundering practices. We want to help Canadian businesses do the right thing. We think it's in the economic interest of this country that they're doing the right thing and for their own bottom line. And so we want to help businesses get on board with doing that and hammering out corruption that's happening internally that they sometimes don't know how to deal with. And so turning a blind eye becomes easy. Let's give them the tools to actually get something done about that. The third area is protecting public assets. We saw the Greenbelt scandal in Ontario as, one example of when people are trying to privately benefit from the sale of what's supposed to belong to all of us. And so we want to make sure that there's good oversight when asset sales are happening. If Crown corporations are going to be privatized, let's make sure that if they're going to go through that process, returns go to the public, not to individual pockets, as we've seen so many times in the past. And of course, the issue that we spoke about earlier, foreign interference, is directly related to our fourth pillar. This is a new one for us, which is driving integrity in politics. And this has to do with foreign interference in our democracy, as well as election interference and dirty money that floods into our system. We certainly want to make sure that we continue the laws that we have in place around political disclosure, that there are financial limits, that corporations and unions and special interests cannot donate to candidates or political parties. This is extremely important to maintain.
Now, Transparency International has another recent report that's making some waves, the Opacity in Real Estate Ownership Index. And the big headline there, the biggest surprise, Canada ranks behind China and Russia in real estate ownership opacity and anti-money laundering practices. You did make reference earlier to British Columbia Land Ownership Transparency Registry, which was one of the good steps that the BC government under the NDP has made in recent years, among the very few that they've made. In the report, it says that rules still allow lawyers in Canada to keep suspected money laundering confidential.
Certainly the 2015 Supreme Court decision in favor of the Law Societies of Canada was, devastating in terms of our ability to hold people accountable because they could hide behind solicitor or client privilege. And lawyers can say that they don't need to disclose. Now, of course, the Law Society's argument is that they can self-regulate. Well, it's been 10 years, and I have a number of friends and our members are members of law societies in many instances, and I know that they're fighting the good fight to make sure that they hold up their end of the bargain. But from our end, we're wondering whether that's actually taking place, and I think the onus is on them to be able to prove that that is taking place. So that's one aspect. I think Ability for now, money to flow through our economy so easily is being and using real estate assets as a way to move those funds, as well as the casinos, as well as the drugs that are coming in to our system. I mean, there's been a lot of attention to the fact that Canada has not acted maybe as swiftly as some other countries that have been able to deal with this. And of course, this is an international problem, but it is getting exponentially worse for Canadians. And we are now finding ourselves more and more in the middle of being a country that is on its way to becoming, in another Jamaica or Luxembourg or Switzerland, where people can park offshore assets and seemingly not have to deal with the consequences.
Now, Transparency International was a part of the Cullen Commission, was one of the interveners in the Cullen Commission that ran here in British Columbia, the public inquiry into money laundering, which issued its final report in June of 2022. It's been almost 3 years, and the key recommendation still has not been activated and may never be activated, but the key recommendation was quite important. Commissioner Cullen said that the BC government should hire an anti-money laundering commissioner and set up an office, an organization. Why do you think that there's the reluctance to actually set this up here in British Columbia? And is this just another case of British Columbia losing the battle by not having someone to be the captain to spearhead this?
I can't speculate as to why it's taking as long as it has. We're now going to be coming up on the third anniversary of the report of the Cullen Commission. We know what the right thing to do is because it's written out in the text of the report. And something like half of the recommendations have seen implementation. There is forward progress on a number of others, but this one in particular, we have still not seen its fulfillment of. I've been in touch with the money laundering secretariat of the province that is coordinating its response to the Cullen Commission report. I know that it has been working on things like the land registry and bringing on beneficial ownership transparency for other companies. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt that there is forward progress being made. I certainly know that they are they have brought those registries online, for instance, and that's something that we want to give them credit for. But at the same time, yes, it's taking way too long to get the other recommendations done. I can't understand why it would take more than 3 years and why the government, more importantly, just doesn't seem to want to talk about these issues anymore. Ultimately, they can, David Eby committed to fulfilling these things. He'd be promised that this was going to take place, that he was taking this seriously. And of course, the BC NDP in 2017 ran on the idea that the previous BC Liberal government was allowing, money laundering to happen seemingly without consequence in the province of British Columbia. Well, that continues today. And so I wonder how long this can take place. We certainly want them to act in the best interest of the province, but this issue will catch up because it seems to be getting worse at a time when we need to be solving this and people are being priced out of our own market. And we're starting to ask questions as to why.
And finally, next year, the FIFA World Cup is coming to Canada. Toronto and Vancouver are two of the 16 host cities. Most of the matches and most of the host cities are in the United States. And now Canadians love soccer, but not so much FIFA, which has been known for corruption. We've got some attempts at transparency in Toronto. They did release their contracts with FIFA under Freedom of Information to the Canadian Taxpayers Federation earlier than Vancouver, which has released some of those documents to me. I'm still trying to get more out of them and unseal some of those documents or uncensor some of those documents through the FOI adjudication process. We also have a different situation. Toronto has a subcommittee that meets in public, that receives reports in public, that makes its recommendations to the wider Toronto City Council. Here in Vancouver, nothing like that happens.
Well, the current administration of Vancouver City Hall has, you know, been fighting with its own integrity commissioner. It seems to be not wanting to be held accountable for things that you know, previous governments have not had as significant an issue disclosing. And I think that that's on them to explain why they don't want to disclose this information. I can't speculate as to why that is. I think you're absolutely right. Toronto has seemingly not had as big of an issue with this. And so their excuse that this is something that FIFA doesn't want seems to not be followed by other municipalities who are complying with the requests.
Trevor Loke, the Executive Director for Transparency International Canada. Trevor, where can listeners find out more information about the work that the organization does?
You can visit transparencycanada.ca to learn out more about what we're working on. We put out reports and news and information. We like to call balls and strikes as much as we can to be able to help further truth and trust within government and society at a time when we are seemingly becoming more and more tribal. We think it's really, really important to get back to remembering what makes a strong democracy, which is trust in each other, trust in our institutions, and being able to know what's going on is ultimately the way that we can best build that. So if people are interested in that message and interested in getting involved, I would encourage them to visit our website. And if interested, anyone can become a member of our organization. And again, that's at transparencycanada.ca. Thank you.
Breaker.news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In focus, Taiwan.tw. China's drills around Taiwan aimed at testing U.S. response, say scholars. The People's Liberation Army Eastern Theater Command launched a new round of exercises using the Army, Navy, Air, and Rocket Forces to close in on Taiwan in multiple directions. Chia Cheng, a research fellow at the Association of Strategic Foresight, said Beijing may be using President Lai's remarks as a pretext to raise tensions across the strait ahead of a potential Xi-Trump summit in a bid to gain leverage or create opportunities for negotiation with the Trump administration. In ABC News Australia, Prime Minister Albanese signals further examination of China's controversial hold on Darwin Port. ABC has been told American officials are increasingly concerned by the agreement signed with Beijing-controlled Landbridge Group in 2015. Landbridge insists the port is a long-term investment that has reported record operational performance. Industry figures believe Landbridge's recently uncovered financial losses could spark a fresh review of the company's 99-year lease. In Hong Kong Free Press, Chinese political artist Bado Chow sneaks message onto Mong Kok billboards for Hong Kong's Art Week. The Australia-based artist is seen silently mouthing a quote from Chairman Mao Zedong. That quote is, "You must take part in revolution," from a 1937 essay by Mao.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.news podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.news podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, are Oregon's top Democrats more interested in housing the poor or helping their campaign donors? Critics say Governor Tina Kotek is placing economic interests of trade union allies ahead of the state's greatest need, more housing. Recent studies in Oregon and California show that requiring affordable housing projects to pay prevailing wage added 9% to 13% to the cost per unit. It's often more in rural areas such as Astoria, say developers. In Washington State Standard, Washington sues RFK Jr. over public health cuts. Washington was among 23 states that sued the Trump administration over the cancellation of $12 billion in federal funding to address infectious diseases, substance abuse, and mental illness, including about $160 million for Washington. The lawsuit comes on the heels of the abrupt termination last week of grants related to disease tracking, vaccination efforts, and other work that officials said could cost thousands of jobs in public health departments nationwide. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. Closer ties with China, says Carney liberal who suggested conservative be handed over to Chinese officials. And exclusive,
Video shows arrest of BC man accused of carjacking in Richmond and crashing through U.S. border. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com. That's Cascadia calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Michael J. Fox. The Burnaby-raised movie star founded the Michael J. Fox Foundation 25 years ago to help fund research for a cure to Parkinson's disease. April is Parkinson's Awareness Month across British Columbia. For more information, go to michaeljfox.org. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 6th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 6th of April in 1886, the city of Vancouver was incorporated? Happy 139th birthday, Vancouver. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there too. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com. Until next week.